Joining us on public service broadcasting, 2SER on Static this evening, it is fantastic to welcome into Sydney a man from public service broadcasting, Jay Wilgoos, Esquire. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm glad you're here. You're the only band I can make that link with.
We're very niche in many ways.
It's so good to have public service broadcasting finally in Sydney as well, Jay, because you skipped us last time you came to Australia. That was a big black mark against you.
Yeah, you know, it just didn't work out logistically for us, sadly. And I was a lot worse with flying back then as well. So I think he was trying to make it as bearable as possible for us. So this time it's been a little bit more manageable.
And now look at you, travelling the whole of the heartland of Australia on the Groove and the Move Festival.
Yeah,
you've seen a lot of it.
Backwards and forwards all over the shop. Yeah, we've definitely done our fair share of air miles this last month, certainly.
It's fascinating that public service broadcasting are playing all those songs from every valley in rural areas in Australia, because it's such a world away, literally, from the album's genesis and setting.
Yeah, to be honest, because it's daytime at a festival and it's quite a young audience, we are definitely a band who would tailor our set to to the situation. So yeah, for those shows, you know, we play Progress, which is off the album, and we've been playing maybe All Out, where people always need Cold because they're kind of a bit more, they have a bit more kind of popular appeal, I suppose. But I think some of the more cerebral stuff, it has to take a backseat at festival shows just by its nature. So,
you're telling me the story of industrial decline doesn't go down too well in the mid-afternoon sun?
I'm not sure it's what people want to hear at a festival, no. You really get more out of it at our own shows, where you've got more license to kind of engage with the material a bit more. You know, festivals are great and they're great for having a good time at, but that's what people are there for, so you need to bear that in mind when you're working through your catalogue, as it were.
Outside of playing at festivals, has the material from every valley travelled well internationally as you've been touring this record? Were the concepts as universal as the first two PSB albums?
Well, I mean, by its nature, it's more niche because it's so focused on one industry and one geographical area. But I thought in doing that, in making it so, and really trying to home in on what makes that community, you know, the issues that that community has had to face, I thought that would help it translate more universally. And, you know, certainly doing some of the press for the album and speaking to people in, you know, far-flung places like Argentina and you know, certainly parallels in Australia as well, it does travel and connect in ways that you might not necessarily assume or expect. So I think, you know, the material is being received as well as we could hope it would be, really. It's it is something, you know, we were in Auckland the other day and I was like, we've written an album about coal mining in South Wales. We are almost literally as far away as you could get from that, but we're going to play these songs anyway. And, you know, they get a good reception. I think part of that is the music communicating for you, and part of it is just the universality of that experience and people being able to empathise and sympathise with what we're trying to talk about.
Are there drunk Welsh men at every show as well? Is there a contingent there that you've tapped into?
We definitely had some in Norway when we played there. they get around. They're not quite as kind of prolific travellers as some elements of our audience. But yeah, it'd be great to go to Patagonia and see, you know, because there are Welsh communities in places like that, you know, where I think they do still speak Welsh down in some areas of Patagonia. It'd be very interesting to get down that way, but it's not really a kind of touring hotspot, I don't think.
Apart from setting this album in such a unique area, the other important point of difference with this public service broadcasting album was that you employed some name guests.
Mm.
I mean, you'd had help before on the Race for Space,
yep,
like Smoke Fairies on Valentina, but this album featured some more marquee names. You had James Dean Bradfield from Manic Street Preachers and Tracy Ann from Camera Obscura. So did you go into that wary of them overshadowing the project at all?
No, I think part of it was not in a cynical way, being aware that this album was a bigger ask for an audience to kind of get on board with, and having this kind of stronger vocal element and a stronger way into it would help make it more accessible. And like I say, it's not in a cynical way. That's, you don't make an album about what we made an album about if you're cynical in terms of your approach to making and trying to sell music. But certainly aware of, you know, by narrowing the scope in some areas, you need to broaden it in others. And just lucky enough that, you know, at home now, we've got a modest level of success, and you know, people do know us more than they, you know, we wouldn't have been able to approach these people in the first or even second albums, I don't think. These people sort of know who we are, and we have a body of work we can point to, and they know that, you know, they're in relatively safe hands with us, hopefully. And it just kind of opens up a few more doors. And yeah, and obviously with James coming from South Wales and being, you know, so closely, you know, it's his story, really, is growing up in the valleys. it lends the album a real weight and a real kind of credibility. That
was he almost angry that he hadn't thought of doing it as a Manic Street Preachers album first?
Well, they definitely touched on bits of it. You know, I don't know if they've ever done anything kind of conceptually from start to finish about it all, but you know, it's been running through so much of their work. I think even the poem that we chose for him to sing, you know, Nicky Wire had done, he used bits of it on his own solo album before. So, you know, there's definitely some elements of crossover there, but I was just glad that he was happy to appear on our album and kind of to vouch for three South Londoners making an album about South Wales. It's quite a big ask, that, and it just says a lot about him as a person and them as a band, I think, that they're still that engaged in contemporary culture.
You also added a lot of other authenticity to this record in the fact that you recorded it in a former steelworks town in southern Wales, and you also interviewed contemporary local citizens. Mm. So, Jay, did you sort of approach the subject almost like a journalist to make sure it was well-rounded and balanced? Was that on your mind more for this album?
Yeah, definitely, to respect the subject and respect the people whose lives we're talking about, and not to go into it with too many of our own preconceptions, and actually, you know, sit down and talk with some of the people whose story this is and get, you know, get some first-hand accounts, I suppose, rather than relying on the filters of history and the filters of kind of the film boards and the, you know, the people who produce the archive that you're relying on finding.
I'm sure there's a lot of sort of propagandist films about Wales and how great coal was.
Yeah, well, we ended up using one of them, you know, there's a very catchy jingle from a film called People Always Need Coal, which we ended up writing a song about, and it's, you know, it's extraordinary. It's on YouTube. I recommend seeing it. It's a BFI film on YouTube, and it's, you know, the lyrics are kind of be a miner, there's money, lots of money and security, and there's sort of, you know, girls in bikinis and champagne popping left, right and centre, and the occasional man pops up with an exciting looking drill, but, you know, they're playing tennis, they're racing go-karts, and it's like, it's a very different life from, I think, the average life of a miner. But it's interesting going back and seeing how that kind of advert for a secure and stable job in mining in South Wales was 1975, and not even 10 years later the whole industry is just being kind of like willfully dismantled by the government. It just reminds you how things that seem so certain in one era can change so rapidly. It's quite instructive, I think.
Were you also prepared when this album came out to receive some flak? Because people love to scream cultural appropriation, and there were some particularly nasty reviews or critiques in some quarters, like the Quietus. You know, I think they missed the part of public service broadcasting altogether, because the third part of it is always inform, educate and entertain, and they seem to have a problem with you entertaining people.
Some people are always going to have a problem with what you do, and it's not my job to kind of engage with individual critics or establishments who take against us for whatever reason. I think if you look objectively at how we made the record, how we attempted to immerse ourselves in the local community, attempted to interview people, engaged with the local community, worked with institutions like the Big Pit National Mining Museum, worked with the local choir, obviously put money into the economy by being there and recording the album there, going back and launching the album there, working with the South Wales Miners Library, meeting the people whose voices are on the album. You know, there's so many things that we did to mitigate, and not in a cynical way, but just because it's the right way to do things, to mitigate any of that kind of flak coming our way. I think if you look at it objectively, you'll see that we did it in the right spirit.
Short of getting a time machine and making sure that you were born in South Wales, there's nothing else more you could
have
done.
Yeah, and I take issue with this wider issue of cultural appropriation. I think as long as you treat the material that you're covering with respect, and as long as you are aware of your limitations in terms of where you come from, your background and your rights or lack of rights to speak about certain things, there's absolutely no reason why you can't write about any subject that interests you. And it's kind of, that's one of the key mechanisms by which culture and art kind of spreads and informs, it is different people's experiences of different aspects of life. And if you only had George Orwell writing about life at Eton College and working in advertising, you know, how much poorer would English literature be? There's so many examples of people kind of stepping outside their areas of expertise to learn about and try and communicate something about areas that they're out of their element in. I just disagree really strongly with that kind of knee-jerk reaction of cultural appropriation. I can see how it is an issue, especially in some particularly sensitive subjects. You know, like we would never make an album about slavery in the US or something like that. That's just that would be very difficult to do and try and lay claim to any kind of authenticity. But this is a story about the deindustrialization of our country, about one particular community in our country, but about the way the whole nature of society and the balance of employment power and employee power and representation shifted, you know, almost permanently, it seems, in the 80s. And I don't feel my conscience is clear, let's just say that.
It also continues on with the theme that was running through the first two public service broadcasting albums, which was Industrial Revolution in the 20th century and Man versus Machine and a lot of elements that you had already explored. So what are you looking at for album number four? Has it made you wary of wading too deep into anything for the next public service broadcasting record?
No, I mean, you can't make albums with criticism in mind. I mean, I think I have a very strong idea of what I'd like to do for album number four. I'm not going to talk about it until we're ready to talk about it, but it's going to be very difficult, and I'm sure it'll open us up to whole new avenues of what I would consider to be, you know, probably unjustified criticism. But you need to take the rough with the smooth.
Is there a lot of material still left in the British Film Institute as well? Are you still welcome back there any day? Have you still got the...
Hope so, yeah.
Still got the key around your neck?
Yeah, they've been very, very, very good to us. They've been an immense kind of support from very early days when they really didn't need to be and probably shouldn't have been. and yeah, we've got a good working relationship with them. I think they can see the value that we bring to some of their archive that has, you know, lain dormant for a while. They're just an amazing institution. And depending on how relevant it is to be working with them for the next album... certainly like to.
Public service broadcasting have already passed through Canberra as well. I was going to suggest you go to the National Film and Sound Archive there. You know, I've asked you this before and I'll keep asking, you know, some kind of Australian sample on a PSB record one day.
I don't know if there might be something in Sputnik in the sort of hubbub of voices at the start, but I'm not sure there's anything from Australia. But I find it fascinating. I find that the history of Australia as you know, as a modern nation is fascinating and obviously sort of very tragic for a number of people in a number of ways, but it's no less interesting for that, sadly. But I don't know, we'll see. It'd be a long way to come to sort of do your research and go to the library and all that kind of stuff. So you don't normally have to think about that when you make
a record, you've got
that
travelling down pat now. I think you can do it again, Joe.
Yeah, it's red wine and Valium for anyone who's interested.
Well, you will be present tonight and Lucid on stage very soon.
Oh yeah, yeah.
At Oxford Art Factory.
Definitely.
So people need to get there to see you. We might have a listen to one of the remixes of They Gave Me a Lamp that you unleashed for Record Store Day. We'll hear this Nabahal Iqbal reworking, which is fantastic.
Yeah, she's really cool. It's a really, really interesting remix of our stuff.
Here it is. This is Public Service Broadcasting remixed on Static. Thanks for the chat, Jay, and have a fun show this evening.
Cheers.